Okay. Because I'm about to act here.
Yes.
And I'm going to record a conversation and put a story together. By the way, I know this passed the House. Do you have any idea when the Senate might take it up? Have you heard anything?
It depends upon whether they get 50 co-sponsors in the Senate. That will trigger a vote. That's what Chuck Schumer has said.
Why do they need 50 co-sponsors?
Why do they need 50 co-sponsors?
Yes.
Well, to get 50 co-sponsors, that assumes that every Democrat co-sponsors the bill, for one. There are three that haven't, and that includes Mark Warner for Virginia. That's why, you know, your audience should be interested.
He hasn't endorsed it yet?
That's correct.
Okay. What about Tim Kaine?
Kaine has, yes.
Okay. Yes. So I'm just curious, do they want to get to 50 so that they can kind of assure that it's going to get, that it'll pass, or do they need 60 on this one?
Well, they need 60 unless they change the filibuster rule.
Right. Okay.
Right. So, that's the finger in the dike that's holding us back.
Okay. So I guess they're still talking about this in the back rooms or whatever.
Well, yes, and they're also trying to put all or part of this in an infrastructure reconciliation bill. Now, that I think is an uphill climb for them. But the PRO Act is all over the president's infrastructure plan.
I'm going to start recording, but can I get your name and title, Steve?
Yeah, it's Stephen Sander, S-A-N-D-H-E-R-R, and I'm CEO of the Associated General Contractors of America.
And just by my background, what is the Association of General Contractors?
Is it a trade organization? Trade organization, yeah. We have 27,000 members across the country.
Okay.
Member firms, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, but, you know, I mean, it's actually an editorial in the Washington, the Wall Street Journal this morning by Richard Trumka, AFL-CIO, and he says, let's clarify a few points. First, the PRO Act will not force Americans into anything. Instead, it will give the workers the choice to form a union through a fair and free election. That's not a power grab, just workplace democracy. What say you, and what's your organization's stance on the PRO Act?
Well, we're opposed to it. We support the statutory right of an employee to organize and join a union and bargain collectively. But what the PRO Act does, it goes way beyond that.
In what way?
Well, for instance, it would allow strikes and picketing for any time and for any reason, which under current law, a strike is only permissible where the employer has committed an unfair labor practice or the parties have reached an impasse in collective bargaining. By allowing strikes at any time and for any reason, the union can call strike, you know, tomorrow and shut down an employer just to gain leverage in collective bargaining or to protest some decision that the employer has made. And then beyond that, it also removes the protections of an employer against what's known as a secondary boycott. And that's where a union has a dispute with an employer. Let's assume they have gone on strike against an employer during collective bargaining. And in order to put additional pressure on that employer, the union goes after a secondary employer that the first employer does business with, in order to try to force that second employer not to do business with the first employer, putting additional leverage and pressure on that first employer to acquiesce to the union's demands.
Huh. I mean, are these likely scenarios to happen, Stephen?
Yes, absolutely. This was the law of the land between 1935 and 1947, and that's exactly why Congress changed the law to limit the ability of unions to strike and to prohibit these secondary boycotts. And if you like, I can give you a brief description of how that secondary boycott issue would work.
Sure.
All right, so let's assume you have a hospital, and the hospital contracts with a non-union laundry service that provides linens, scrubs, towels to the hospital. And let's assume the union that represents employees that perform that kind of work goes to the hospital and says, you know, we noticed that you have a non-union laundry service, and we think you should hire an employer who has a contract with us. And the hospital administrator says, well, you know, we have a contract with this firm. They do good work for us. It's the right price. And the union says, well, we think you should change your mind. So the union puts up a picket line. Under the PRO Act, they would be able to put up a picket line in front of the hospital and then go to the nurses' union of the hospital and say, we need you to honor our picket line, which means they don't go into work. So then the hospital has the challenge of trying to continue to operate without nurses, and obviously that compromises patient care. So then the hospital administrator has the choice of going to the laundry service that they have hired and canceling their contract and paying whatever penalties would be owed to that employer, and then bringing in a union laundry service, perhaps at a higher price, or they try to work through the strike. Well, what do you think they're going to do? They can't work without nurses. They can't perform their duties to patients without nurses. So that basically could shut down the hospital until that hospital kicks out that laundry service to satisfy the union. That's what happens if you allow secondary boycotts.
Mm. By the way, does the AGC, do you have union members?
Yes, we do. Yeah. Probably 40% of our membership has collective bargaining agreements. So we're not anti-union. We're pro-employer, we're pro-employee. We want to maintain the delicate balance in labor management relations that has worked well for over half a century.
I'm wondering, have you guys lobbied Mark Warner to look at this, or do you know why he's sort of holding back on this?
No, I would not speak for Senator Warner. I think he is demonstrating some leadership by keeping an open mind on the issue. He has some concerns and questions that he has presented. It's our job, the business community's job, to try to provide honest and helpful answers to those questions, and that's what we're attempting to do in this process.
So you said this. You were saying, Stephen, that this thing is all sort of the PRO Act is sort of wrapped around the American Jobs Plan in some way.
Yeah. I mean, this is a high priority for the administration. If you were to read the president's jobs plan, 28-page document, and scattered throughout that document are references to the need to enact the PRO Act, and there's a lot of pressure coming from Democrats in the Congress, while we read about these bipartisan negotiations to come up with a solution to the infrastructure issue. There are a lot of Democrats that are saying that they probably won't support an infrastructure package unless it has these labor protections included in that package.
You know, I was reading something in this letter from Richard Trumka. He was saying that a recent Morning Consult poll found a, quote, staggering 73% of voters, including 59% of Republicans, support the right to collectively bargain. He says the PRO Act will strengthen and expand that right, and that's why in a rare bipartisan vote, the House passed the PRO Act in March. Mm-hmm. You take issue with any of that statement?
Yeah, well, first of all, it wasn't really a bipartisan vote. There was one Democrat who voted against it and five Republicans that voted for it. It wasn't an overwhelming bipartisan support for the bill. Secondly, as I mentioned before, I think the business community needs to acknowledge that the employees have that statutory right to bargain collectively. And that, you know, the business community is not seeking to interfere with that right. What we are trying to do is we are trying to make sure that the other things that are in the bill that go far beyond guaranteeing that right, such as allowing strikes at any time and removing protections against secondary boycotts, that those things don't creep into the law.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, why do you think this is? I don't know. When did the PRO Act start, you know, gaining some support? But why do you think this came up now? Do you think that there are politicians who think maybe right to work states, employers have too much sway over employees, or what do you think?
Yeah.
What do you think this is all about?
Well, I think it's all about the fact that in the private sector, unions only represent about 7% of the private sector workforce, and that's because employers. I mean, we're not dealing with robber barons anymore as employers. You know, basically, employees have a minimum wage. They have health care benefits from Obamacare. They have safety protections under OSHA. They have family and medical leave protections. You know, they have all of these benefits and advantages that people two or three generations ago didn't have. And that raises the question, when a union shows up to want to organize them, well, why do I pay you union dues and fees when I have all of this stuff already? What better deal can you get for me? And I think that's what you saw in the Amazon vote in Alabama a few weeks ago. Richard Trumka's Wall Street Journal letter didn't say anything about the 71% of the employees of that Amazon workforce that voted against the union.
Right.
Because they didn't see that there was an additional benefit from having the union.
Well, I can understand, you know, if you're an employer and you're not competitive with what a union can offer. If you don't get competitive, that's when a union might come sniffing around. So, I mean, that makes perfect sense, you know. So, I mean, I guess in that way, maybe, especially when maybe about 40, 50, 60 years ago, that when unions really started protecting a lot of workers, you know, when there were employers, Stephen, that were really abusing their workers,
right.
That it might have made more sense, but a lot of employers, like in Amazon or something, they know they need to be competitive. They're going to offer similar benefits, don't you think?
Right. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned right to work. Virginia, of course, is a right to work state. This bill would gut state right to work laws because it would require employees. It would allow them to exercise the right not to join a union if the union is the bargaining representative for the employees of that company, but it would still require them to pay what's known as an agency fee or a fair share fee of fees and dues to the union for the administration and negotiation of a collective bargaining agreement. The problem with that is that money's not segregated. That money goes into political accounts of the unions. And that's one of the reasons that a lot of employees choose not to belong to a union, because they don't want their money supporting political candidates and political causes that they don't agree with. And so this is a backdoor way for the unions to collect more political money that goes to support candidates that support their interests.
So just to wrap up, I mean, based on the House vote, aren't you fairly sure that this would not pass the Senate, or you just don't know what's going to happen?
It all depends upon the filibuster rule. If the filibuster rule remains intact, the unions are going to be hard-pressed to find 60 votes. If that filibuster rule goes away with 50 Democrats, three of whom have not co-sponsored, and at least one Republican who's potentially – who could potentially support this bill, then all bets are off.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, again, you have no idea when this might come up for debate and a vote in the Senate.
Yeah, Senator Schumer, the majority leader of the Senate, says if they get 50 co-sponsors, the bill comes to the floor.
Okay.
But again, if the filibuster rule remains intact, we're not going to see 60 votes. But we are, you know, we are not taking anything for granted here. We are operating under the premise that it's quite possible that the filibuster rule could be eliminated.
Okay. Could they eliminate it just for this vote, or they'd have to eliminate it for everything?
Likely for everything.
Yeah. Well, I know there's been a lot of back and forth between, like, McConnell and everybody about that, yeah.
Well, there are some that there are some smart Democrats that recognize that the pendulum swings back and forth. And if you, within 2 years, you could have a situation where Congress is completely controlled by the Republicans. And do they want to give the Republicans the ability to pass legislation in the Senate with a 51 vote margin?
Right. Okay. All right. I think I got it. Anything you want to add, Stephen?
I think we covered it all, and I hope I made the case that, to Trump's point, yeah, we agree. Employees have the right to bargain collectively and organize and join a union. But this bill has a lot more in it than those simple provisions. And enactment of the bill would cause serious damage to a struggling economy.
It seems like you're saying that they're trying to fix something that isn't broke.
That's a good way to put it.
Okay. All right. Stephen, hey, thank you very much for getting on the phone. It was great talking
thank
to you,
you
and
Jim.
I'll get something on the air in the next few days.
All right. Thanks a lot. Take care.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.
You too.